Hi, I'm Clemmie Telford and it's time to get open and get honest. Each week, I interview a guest about a topic that we, as a society, often shy away from. From sex lives to salaries, life and death, religion and real bodies, no subject is off the table. Welcome to Honestly, the podcast. Shoes are my absolute weakness. They make or break an outfit. This season's range from M&S is pretty dreamy. There's some great boots and some loafers that I've got my eye on. And if you're a heels wearer, then there's some platforms that would make a great investment too. I'm genuinely thrilled to be partnering with Marks & Spencer on this podcast. Not only are they supporting this podcast, they're indulging my very real shoe obsession too. Today I'm joined by a women's health expert, trained birth doula and author of what has been described as a game-changing book for women called Period Power. She is Maisie Hilm.
Hello.
How are you?
Oh, I'm feeling really happy to be here.
Oh, I'm happy to have you here. So that's nice. I've been looking forward to this one.
Me too.
The name of the game of this podcast is Honesty. And so I like to start with a quick fire round to get us in an honest frame of mind. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. On a scale of 1 to 10, how cool are you?
10. I'm going to own that.
Well done. Yeah. On a scale of 1 to 10, how nice are you?
Also, you... Ooh. Last week I would have said 10, but now I'm post-ovulation, so I'd say 6.
Yeah, on the way down.
Yeah.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how strong are you?
My instinct today is 3. Pretty...
Not feeling strong.
Not feeling particularly strong today, but I think I'm a strong person.
Interesting. Night owl or early bird?
Early bird.
Dog or cat person?
Neither.
You're not the only one, you know. Yeah. I think we're all taught that you have to like one or the other. What happens if you don't? Introvert or extrovert?
Extrovert. Who likes to spend a lot of time alone?
Yeah, but I was talking to someone else about this. There's that introvert, extrovert, where my instinct is to be quite extrovert, but I have to really power myself up by time alone. What star sign are you?
Saggy.
Are you?
And a very... I'm a definite Sagittarian.
I've got a Saggy, yeah. Boy. When did you last cry?
Oh, I welled up on the tube here.
Do you want to elaborate on why or not?
It was all to do with how awesome women are and women's sports, because on the cover of a free newspaper, they had a picture of the women's football team celebrating.
Lionesses.
Yeah, and then on the inside, they had a story about Coco, the 15-year-old tennis star who beat Venus Williams at Wimbledon. Wow. The look on Venus Williams' face and the look on her face, it was just like a real celebration of how awesome women are.
Funnily enough, I'm going to talk to you about women in sport and periods in due course, so we'll probably come back to that. When did you last weigh yourself?
I don't... and have never really weighed myself, so I've got no idea.
Interesting. When did you last go to the dentist?
2 years ago? Too long. Mm.
You're not the only one.
Yeah.
Have you ever wet yourself as an adult?
No.
Oh, good for you. Good for your pelvic floor. How did you do in your GCSEs, and has it impacted your life?
Oh. So I did pretty well, I'd say. I think I got 3 A's... I'm pretty sure I got 3 A's, a good selection of B's and a couple of C's.
The joy is you could absolutely make it up and no one would be any wiser.
Yeah, but I am a total perfectionist and also a real geek. So these are things that I cling on to in life in perhaps an unhealthy way. But I, at school, was equally into science and art. And a lot of my higher education has been a battle between the two. Which is why when I finally completed a degree in acupuncture, I think it was because it's a real mixture of
the two. Yes, that middle ground for you.
Yeah.
Where are you happiest?
When I'm ovulating.
Apt answer. What are you most afraid of?
For me, I think all things to do with feeling scared now revolve around my son. Hmm. I don't think I feel it at other times.
No. Yeah, that's very common, I'm sure. I'm just speaking for myself. Common between the two people in this room. Yeah. Biggest regret?
I think it's to do with not leaving relationships sooner.
Mm. And 3 words your friends would use to describe you?
Calm, positive, geek.
What a combo.
Yeah.
But calm and positive. I mean, nothing wrong with being a geek, but that is a, like, that's like my life goals, to be,
yeah,
to be a calm person. And actually, the backstory to that is we were offered coffees before this, and Maisie very smartly said no, and I said yes. And I wonder why I'm not the calm one. There's a lesson. Anyway, now onto the section that I like to call the big topic. And I've asked Maisie here to talk about periods, which quite frankly makes me very excited because I love talking about periods. And then I had a funny kind of internal battle, as ever, about whether it was a niche subject. And then I corrected myself because that's blooming mad, isn't it? It's like it affects every single person. And even if I do have any male listeners out there, please, please keep listening, because this is your wives, your daughters, your sisters, your colleagues, and we need to educate women better, but we also need to educate men, don't we? So for context, tell me about your background and what inspired you to write your book, Period Power.
Well, it all started when I used to have horrific period pain for years, and I was on the pill to manage those symptoms. Then I wasn't having a great experience on the pill, really, which is familiar. Some people, you know, feel great on it. I didn't. And when I was coming off it, I happened to find a book called Taking Charge of Your Fertility, which is all about being aware of your menstrual cycle, which was just filled with information on how to either avoid pregnancy or how to achieve pregnancy. Mm-hmm. And I was just blown away by the content that was in it. So that really sowed a seed in me of just being fascinated by the female body. Mm-hmm. And I started understanding my cycle that way. And then I, you know, trained in massage and aromatherapy and acupuncture and all sorts of things, but it was always with the aim of working in women's health. And I was also working as a birth doula. So one way or another, my life revolved around ovaries and uteruses.
So it was always meant to be. Actually, I read a book called Code Red, which is a kind of a similar vein. Yeah. It's a really brilliant book, but I didn't find it all that approachable. Whereas I've actually, not reading your book cover to cover, I find myself dipping in, which may be the way that people do it. And I find it super approachable. So congratulations.
Thank you. That was really important to me, actually. I wanted it to be accessible and for it not to be a more obscure kind of hippie-fied experience.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? It's finding the place between being, or as you talked about in your course, skill set, I suppose, between being holistic and being scientific and not turning people off in either of those places.
Yes.
A good place for people to understand a bit of where you're coming from is if you could share what you call your period 101.
Yeah, it's a helpful place to start off with, because there is a difference between your period and your menstrual cycle. And sometimes we can get those two confused. So your period is the length of time when you're menstruating and actually bleeding. Mm-hmm. And your menstrual cycle is a whole course of hormonal events, including ovulation and menstruation. So it's what we would typically describe as a 28-day cycle, even though only 12.4% of us have a 28-day cycle. Mm-hmm. And then we can split up the menstrual cycle into two phases, the follicular phase, which starts from day one of your cycle, which mm-hmm. is the first day that you bleed. And it lasts all the way to when you ovulate. And that's the phase when estrogen is getting going. And then after ovulation, you enter what's called the luteal phase, the second half of the cycle. And that goes from ovulation to the start of your period.
And does that normally divide in half?
Well, it all depends on how long your cycle is. So if you have a 28-day cycle and you ovulate on day 14, then the first half is 14 days and so is the second half. But if you have a cycle that's on the longer side, then when you ovulate is going to be later in the cycle. Yeah. So the second half of the cycle is set at around 14 days in length.
You also talk about the seasons of your cycle, and brilliantly, and everyone should go and check it out, on your Instagram account, which is it Period Power or is it your name?
It's Maisie Hill.
Maisie Hill. You did a day-by-day kind of video journal, didn't you, of your cycle, which is, for me, was fascinating because you're all like feeling great about it in the beginning. And then as you get to the autumn and the winter of your cycle, so towards your period, you kind of in yourself went off the idea, didn't you? And didn't really, went off it, but you suddenly don't want to push yourself out into the world.
Yeah, well, this was the thing, and that I really tend to have great creative ideas around when my period comes and like at the start of my cycle. And I was mindful of like, okay, I'm going to start this video journal how am I going to feel about the more challenging points in my cycle? Mm-hmm. Like, am I still going to be able to show up and share that? But I really wanted to. And it's interesting because as a practitioner, you're always told not to share your story. So I've always shied away from doing that because you want to make it about your client. Yes. And always make it about them. So my training is don't reveal that much. But I thought, actually, I'm going to step into this space. I'm going to do it. And the response has just been overwhelming. Mm-hmm. It's been incredible.
To shine some light on that seasons of your cycle, could you say a little bit more about that?
Yeah, sure. So the seasons of the cycle are the seasons of the year. So winter is the time when you have your period, roughly speaking. You know, there's no set times for these. It just depends on your experience of your cycle and when you feel your seasons lie. But the order is that when you have your period, it's winter. Post-period and in the run-up to ovulation, it's your spring. And then a few days before you ovulate, through to afterwards, summer. And then your premenstrual time is your autumn.
And empowered with that knowledge, you can begin to shape your behaviours. So for me, before you're reading your book, I'm reading Code Red, an understanding about ovulation. When you feel bloody great and you think you can conquer the world, and really trying to organise my diary accordingly, like anything that involves a lot of being public and giving a lot of myself, trying to do that at that time, because actually I'm really up for it. And then allowing yourself during your autumn and winter to have a more empty diary or to do things which involve a lot more alone time.
Yeah.
And it's such an amazing thing to unlock that, isn't it?
Yeah, it's incredible. And it does make life so much easier. That's the main thing with this. And, you know, of course, no one has complete control over their diary that they can do this. But it does mean that when you're just going about your regular day, but it's at a point in your cycle when you struggle, then you can talk to yourself with more kindness, and instead of beating yourself up the whole day thinking that you're useless and why can't you do this and oh, everyone else is doing this and that, why can't I? You can just go, oh, it's day 20. Instead of going out with all my colleagues after, I'm just going to go home and have a nice dinner
because
and get
actually,
to bed.
Next time the work drinks roll around during ovulation, you'll be the funnest person there. There's a brilliant meme going around at the moment where it says, am I the ugliest person in the world or is my period due? And it's really interesting. I'm doing a lot of personal work on body image, and I now know that what a trigger that part of my cycle is.
Yeah, exactly. And also it can be things like in the first half of the cycle when the hormone estrogen is getting going, that can really clear up your skin and make your features more symmetrical.
So that you're appealing to the opposite sex?
Yes, exactly. But similarly, there is a hormonal drop-off that happens a couple of days before your period's due, and the progesterone hormone that's hopefully been making you feel quite calm and serene in the second half of your cycle, although it can also make you kind of a bit more tired and have other impacts, there's a drop off that happens quite suddenly just before your period starts, and that can leave you feeling like a hot mess, suddenly just like really tearful, not up for doing anything other than binge watching things on Netflix. And that's often when you see people wanting to binge eat and not being happy with their bodies, you know. And like you said, if your dress size has jumped up two sizes because you're bloated, then, you know, that's not going to feel good.
And I watched a great video from a PT online, but in a day-to-day exercise, but also in sport, you know, I'm quite into lifting, and knowing that I'm going to lift much more at one point in my cycle to a few days later, and kind of pushing myself at that point when my body's up for it. And then, knowing to either do different kinds of exercise at that point in my cycle, much kinder, more meditative.
Or just doing stuff that's maintaining what you've achieved already. So I will often say that winter's a time when you might want to take it more easy, whether that's having rest days and not exercising or doing things that are a bit lighter. You know, some people feel great exercising is normal. That's also totally fine. And then spring is a great season to play.
So that's kind of like in the middle of your cycle.
So spring is like your period stopped and you're in the run up to ovulation. Yes. And this is a time when is really good to initiate exercise. So, you know, just before your period's due is not the time to test out a new exercise plan, because it's going to possibly feel quite hard for your body. But doing it just after your period's finished, unless you're quite anemic, for example, that's a time to like give things a go and experiment and try things out. And it's also the time to just start ramping up your efforts if you're used to exercising and really going for it, because you're often able to hit your PBs for things in whatever form that is. But around ovulation, you have to pay attention to what your form is doing, because we know from the research that you're more likely to injure yourself.
Wow.
And then I think after ovulation in the autumn, that's when you're like maintaining what you've done in the first half or doing things that are a bit more relaxed. I think exercising with other females in this phase is really great, because we know that hanging out with other women can help boost your progesterone levels. So exercising with women, maybe exercise that involves like being able to chat, like going for a run with someone, or has a hanging out component as well, really? Can feel really nice for women in that second half.
See, it's fascinating. And this is it, laddering back to my first point of like, how important is it? It impacts absolutely everything. You know, I was again reading something about how it could begin to, well, productivity in the workplace, if we had a better understanding, because that is our superpower, right? Yes, it's hard that we go through these drop-offs and peaks, but there is something in that bit where you feel amazing, that superpower that arguably men don't have access to. And if you can ride that out and try and work around that cycle, it can be huge.
Yeah. And there's even, you know, in the trickier, like rockier points in the cycle where you might feel a bit wobbly, for example, not physically wobbly, but just, you know, you have an off day. There's still power in those moments.
Time for reflection or...
Yeah, or just like really owning your feelings and voicing them instead of holding them in. You know, there's all sorts of ways of working with it. But I recently met two women at an event I did who were like, you know, we've read your book, we loved it, we're using it for our work life. We've got a calendar on our wall of where we are in our cycles so that we know how to bounce off each other's strengths with any work commitments. And it's what I also do with my assistant in our calendar. I've got my cycle and I've got her cycle so that we both know what the other one needs in order to get the most out of it, either to do with productivity or to do with like just taking a step back.
But surely also in relationships. You know, I'm not good at it, but my husband now understands, you know, I'm like, I'm premenstrual. I'm not rational. I just need you to be really, really kind to me. But also, poor guy, the other point, when you're firing at all cylinders and they're like, well, you've woken up and you've got a to-do list this long. But, you know, if we can begin to have that conversation around that, and with mental health, you know, it's so tied up in that.
Oh, yeah, completely. And, you know, it was really interesting. You're a mum yourself. Like, relationships are challenging anyway, but especially when you have kids, it's so hard just to find the time to have conversations, let alone, like, anything more than that. And post having my son Nelson, there's definitely been dips in communication, and especially with writing the book, like it's just things are full on. Last month when I was tracking my cycle on Instagram, my boyfriend was watching the videos every day. We had such an amazing month as a couple. And because he got it totally. So even me, as a massive proponent of share your cycle with your loved ones, let them know what's going on, that can still be hard to do day to day.
Yeah, and actually often the time when you most need them to be kind is, for me, if I am feeling wobbly, I go, everything becomes very internal. So it's hard then, you can't articulate that. But if you can preempt it.
Yeah, exactly. And it was quite hilarious, because he'd finished put our son to bed and we'd start talking. He'd go, hold on, just give me 2 seconds. I just need to watch this video.
And then he'd be like, oh.
Then I know.
Oh, good
what
on
it is
him,
your
though.
Need. Yeah, it was fantastic.
Quick ad break to let you know about our sponsors, M&S, and their Per Una range, which I describe as effortless and feminine. Not exactly words I'd use to describe myself, but a girl can dream. Jokes aside, the fabrics and finishing details are gorgeous, pretty, and super easy to wear too. What do you think are some of the biggest misconceptions? There was a controversial post that you put up where you showed cervical fluid, and Instagram did not like that, did they? But reading on from that, there's a big misconception that just because you've got a lot of cervical fluid doesn't mean that you're turned on, and people not understanding the difference between that.
Yeah, and this is such an important topic for me, because The response to that post was overwhelming. Hundreds and hundreds of DMs from people saying, thank you for telling me that my body is normal and I've been to my GP about
what,
this.
What, because of the discharge?
Yeah, because they thought there was something wrong with them for producing that fluid. Because they haven't had children yet. Some people quite young, you know, or even some people who were in their 50s saying, I wish I'd known this when this was happening to me.
It's mad, isn't it? It's something that we can live with.
Yeah, and it's so important because it helps you know when you're fertile, so that's important whether you want kids or not. It's just also really important for partners to know that just because someone is wet doesn't mean that they are aroused and ready to have penetrative sex.
I think also to go back to first periods. Now, my parents are relatively liberal, but I didn't feel particularly well educated. I learned quite a lot from Hello God, It's Me, Margaret. Do you remember that book? With pads with loops on them.
Yes.
But even that I started my periods in the 90s, and that book was based in the 50s, wasn't it?
Yeah. So I think they've updated it since because it featured a sanitary belt that you wore that kept the pad in place.
Can you imagine?
I think the updated version has got sticky bits and wings.
I mean, yeah, and then we're going to have to update it again. Do you think that things are improving, that girls are getting better educated?
I like to think they are. I have my doubts. My sister-in-law has worked as a nurse in sexual health for 30 years, and she just says it hasn't changed.
No.
People are still coming in with the same misunderstanding about their bodies and their ability to get pregnant that they were 30 years ago. You know, and there has been Endometriosis UK have, you know, really campaigned and been successful about teaching menstrual health from primary age and upwards. So I have hopes that things are going to shift. But I think we all have a responsibility to be working hard at that.
Yeah, well, it's interesting in myself, and it's not to do with periods, but I've got a 6.5-year-old and he's just started asking a lot of questions. We've had a lot of talk about balls this week.
Yeah.
Really, really interesting. I made my husband show them their balls.
Yeah.
His balls. And I always considered that I would be really adept and equipped to have these difficult, they're not even difficult conversations, but to talk about them. And the problem is, they do it at 7:45 at night when you're wishing they were in bed asleep and your dinner's burning downstairs. Or they do it when you're on the back foot and I'm guilty of dismissing them or giving them the short answer.
Yeah.
And I absolutely am sure that is the case when you're trying to educate girls about periods. You think that you'll know how to talk to them about it and perhaps you won't.
Yeah, I think people tend to leave it too long, and that's when it gets harder to introduce a topic, especially when we're talking about blood, which most kids will associate with something traumatic and not something that's just a healthy, normal part of having a female reproductive system. But when I got my period back after having my son at 18 months, I showed him straight away at 18 months and just started talking about it. And I talked to him about my cycle in an age-appropriate way, but like he's 3 now, but as a 2-year-old, he knew the difference between vulva and vagina.
He
calls his penis a penis. We talk about things in a very open way, and I think that's really important for young boys and young girls to understand their bodies, to know the proper names of their body parts, and to not make it into a big deal. And I think sometimes when he catches me, like you said, with a question, I'm thinking, well, how am I going to answer that? It's often just checking yourself and making sure that the tone in which you're talking is
neutral.
Oh, that happens, and blah, blah, blah. And it doesn't need to be a big answer, particularly if you're feeling a bit unsure or nervous about what that conversation means for that person and your relationship. I think there's also, it's remembering that when we're talking about this, we're talking about the whole of the menstrual cycle, and we always focus on a period, but actually there's all the rest of it. And, you know, if it feels better to talk about other parts of the cycle and just start feeding in little bits and pieces about it, then maybe that's the way to go and kind of work round to
period. It's a can of worms, which I'm up for opening, but, you know, they've got to understand all of it, haven't they? But
yeah.
Even actually, I had home births with my second and third, and so their kids were back with me not very quickly, but, you know, within a few hours. And so they saw me in my adult nappy afterwards, and they kind of, Well, there was a lot of conversation with that and how the baby came out and all of that. So they kind of clued up on that since.
And I think that's such a great initiator, because I've shared my son's birth story with him and he likes hearing about it. You know, kids love hearing about when they were in you and they came out. And that can be a way of setting the tone for those conversations and going into the level of detail that feels appropriate for your family dynamic.
So it does feel like there has been a shift recently, and maybe it's for my own awareness, but for many years it was like sanitary towels or tampons, and now the market is opening up, you know, period knickers. What would be the more...
Period wear.
Yeah. Game changer. Cups that are a game changer. Period tracking apps, which are, I mean, no greater joy than after my period finally coming back, being able to get back on my app.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
It's so fascinating. But do you think that do you see a shift, or is it again because your head's in that space that you're...
I do think there's been a shift, and I've listened to interviews of the female owners of a lot of these companies, and I think we are, as consumers, wanting more options, and the market is responding to that. But also, I think as we are more conscious about the waste that we're producing, that people are looking at responsibilities around that and what is a better option for ourselves, but also the planet. Moment.
And I think social media has played a really positive role in that, because I've made the decision to move to a menstrual cup and will keep posting about it, mainly because it's really liberating for women, because it can be a huge impact for the environment. And every time I do, the like barrage of questions, and that you would possibly have felt embarrassed or silly or not know where to ask those questions. And unless you've got a friendship group where you are really open, it's just giving people the opportunity to ask the 101 about what they're like. And if you can convince one person to make a shift.
Yeah.
I always like to throw this out to my followers. I asked the good people of Instagram about their relationship with periods, and it's fascinating. So I asked a few questions. First of all, I asked what age they started their period, and lots of them were around the age of 11, which, given that most of my audience are kind of around 30, I knew that the age of periods was shifting down, but I still found that quite surprising.
Yeah, and it can be even younger than that now. And there's, you know, a couple of things I think to think about, and that's important, especially if you have female kids, is thinking about maintaining a healthy weight, because when you have lots of fat cells, then you're producing more estrogen, and that can get you starting your menstrual cycle earlier.
Yeah, I did so read that. There's like kind of a weight that
can trigger things. Yeah, so that can have an impact. And also our exposure to hormone disruptors in the environment that mimic our natural hormones that come about through exposure to plastics and things like that, that can also be involved in triggering things.
I asked people, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much does it impact your life? And interestingly, well, I thought it was interesting, it was in extremes. So people were either felt that it was 10 out of 10, or there were occasions with people that said 1. And I've got a few friends who, like, it is not a big deal.
Yeah.
And I can't decide whether they are just super fortunate, because, again, through my blog, where recently I've shared a story of someone with endometriosis, but also the conversations I have, there are people that periods literally dictate their entire life.
Yeah, completely. And not just periods, but other parts in the menstrual cycle as well. But I think if I had to answer that question, I have like a period that doesn't really affect me.
Yeah.
I have a very healthy period, but I still feel like it affects me in a massive way, but not in a negative way.
No, same. I have a very untroublesome period, but it impacts absolutely everything. And I can't decide whether the people who are 1 out of 10 are just shutting off a part of them, whether it's it's fascinating.
Well, it's hard, I think, until you have, you know, shine a light on these things and you start actually tracking your cycle and being aware of these things, then perhaps you might end up describing things differently.
Yeah. I asked people what their average period length was, cycle and period length, to differentiate the two. And as expected, 28 days was really common. But people bled for longer than I expected, more like some 6 to 7 days.
Yeah.
Which is
in the realms of normal, according to the kind of official descriptions of things. I'd say that's slightly long.
Yeah.
I think getting it to around 5 days is a nice place.
But again, it's that thing that I know an awful lot about my best friends and my sisters, but I wouldn't know that about them. And until that becomes a part of your conversation.
Yeah.
You know, I remember really, my best mates will laugh. We had this conversation where before I discovered menstrual cups, I was still using tampons and I was using a non-applicator one and it was falling out. And they were like, Kemi, you just need to go up a size. Why have you not like talked about this? And I said, oh, I just, you know, you repeat by the same one you bought when you were 17, 18 and then go back after having kids. And I needed to have that conversation with my mates and laugh about it. I was like, oh, yeah. Because you don't know, do you?
No, and I think because it only happens once a month or so, you know, you're kind of in it and you're thinking, oh, blimey, what's going on here? But then, like, you're out of it and you're just getting on with your life.
Yeah.
And then it's rolled around again and you're like, oh. But that's the same thing with when there are particular signs and symptoms that are concerning to do with the menstrual cycle. That's why it's really important to be documenting them and tracking them and actually taking steps to speak to your GP or another healthcare practitioner.
And I asked people what sanitary products they were using. And yeah, as I said, I felt there's been a real shift. But I also learned about free bleeding.
Yeah.
Would that include using like period pants or is that like nothing?
Oh, I don't know what the technical description would be. I think it would be
nothing.
Using nothing.
I mean, you have to have a really light.
I know some people who've done it purposefully, like to see what it feels like. Not, well, actually, one of them out in public. But some of them have, Kieran Gandhi did when she ran the London Marathon. She didn't use any menstrual products because she wanted to make a statement about period poverty and about the, you know, women's bodies. So she did it very publicly.
Yeah. In fact, I feel like we haven't touched on period poverty enough and I feel like we should go back to that. So 130,000 girls miss school each year because of period poverty, and 1 in 10 girls can't afford to buy products, which I worked a lot with Redbox Project last year and of course Pink Protest, but it kind of doesn't bear thinking about, does it, trying to navigate being a teenager, being at school, all those changes and not being able to
Exactly. And especially when the teen years are when there can be, it's one of the phases of life when there can be a hormonal imbalance of producing or being sensitive, producing too much estrogen in relationship to progesterone, or being very sensitive to the effects of it because your body is just gearing up and getting used to things, and that can cause you to have a really heavy flow. So, you know, suddenly you're just in a hormonal situation, which is quite common for teens, of having heavy periods, but you haven't got the means to take care of yourself and to just have access to menstrual products. And, you know, there's the immediate effects of that, of like, what does that feel like of having to use a newspaper or some socks,
toilet roll.
But then it's also like the long-term effects of what does that teach you about your worth and your self-confidence and your right to a very basic provision.
There are some charities that you can, the Red Box Project, which quite literally puts boxes of sanitary wear in toilets in secondary schools, or in schools, not just secondary schools, and they are tend to be designated per borough. So you can Google that. And there's the Hygiene Bank who... the equivalent of a food bank, but for hygiene products. Any other?
Oh, there's loads out there, but Bloody Good Period do amazing work, and they have a really great scheme where you can do a monthly contribution to them, either financially or donating actual products. But also the Cup Effect are amazing, and if you buy menstrual cups through them, they donate 2 for every cup that you buy them to women in East Africa and in the UK who are unable to access them.
In a very bad segue back to the questions I ask Instagram, some quick fire questions before we begin to wrap up. Somebody asked, can other people smell me when I'm on my period? And I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah.
It's something you're not self-conscious, but you're aware of, aren't you?
Yeah. And I think this, you know, going back to the conversation about what those first periods were like and just that kind of fear of detection, like, are people going to know? Can they tell by how I'm walking? Can they smell?
Yeah.
That kind of thing. Not that I feel like that's a smell that's very personal.
Yeah, and you know what? I've never once been surrounded by women and thought, I think that you smell like you're on your period.
Yeah. So, and if you are aware of a smell, then that's usually a sign that whatever product you're using to manage your flow needs to be changed.
That's exactly. That's probably
periods aren't dirty. We're not like emitting toxins through our body by having our periods, and that's like a belief that's been around for centuries that there's this thing called a menotoxin that we, you know, get rid of our bodies. But I think that that belief has kind of stayed within our society that we're dirty and that we're smelly, and we're not.
Yeah, so that's got to shift away from that. So to wrap up, I guess, what are the small changes we could all do to help with our menstrual health?
Oh, I think the big one is know your own cycle and know what your experience is. And that needn't be much. It can just be jotting down a word or two every day about how you feel physically and emotionally. I think that is going to make a huge difference in the conversations we're having with doctors about what our experiences are and whether we need treatment help with what's going on. Having more conversations openly, whether it's with our kids or with each other, and just really owning that this is something that we experience and it's a conversation we need to be having. If men had them, they'd be talking about them all the time.
Yeah, I guess that's the big picture stuff, isn't it? But it's just putting it on the agenda, I suppose.
Yeah, and I think is also the thing when it comes to women's health. Is like, if you are having an issue to do with your cycle or your hormones, you suspect something's going on, then go and speak to your GP about it. Involve them in the conversation. Let them know.
Yes. So the bit before the end, remind people where they can find you.
I'm on Instagram as _MaisieHill_. And my website, MaisieHill.com, has a free PDF that people can get to start tracking their cycle.
Excellent. And anything you want to shout about and promote? I guess your book.
My book, Period Power, Harness Your Hormones and Get Your Cycle Working For You. It is a game changer.
Yeah,
that is. That word, I always kind of shy away from it, but it is.
I would go so far to say as if you are, well, anybody, but particularly if you're a person who has periods, there will be a piece of information in there that you will learn that will benefit you.
Yeah, I agree.
And I always like to ask people, who would they like to have an honest conversation with? It could be someone famous, it could be a troll, could be a friend.
Oh, I think I would have to go back to my junior school teacher, Mrs. Thompson, who was my final year there. And she was amazing. You know, just it's a big deal before you transition up to secondary school. Mm. And I had really horrific appendicitis that had turned gangrenous and things. And she came and she taught me at home
every week
so that I'd still be prepared for the shift. She was amazing. But she told me, you can write and you should. And I'd love to go back and ask her why, you know, what she saw.
I wonder where she is.
I tried to track her down. I did thank her in my book. It's just hard. It's like pre-internet. These people existed pre-internet.
Yeah, are you on Facebook? Probably on Facebook. Oh, well, there you go. That's special, isn't it? It's amazing the power those people have at that point in our lives to see who you're going to be.
Yeah.
And I'm always really aware that my guests have to be super honest on this, and then I'm not, so I like to share one bit of honesty, and I'll be honest, I really, really don't like miniature dogs. I see them and I have bad thoughts and I want to do bad things to them. And I actually even Googled it, and it appears that actually there's some truth in my feelings of negativity towards dogs. It's perhaps because their owners treat them in a certain way, which makes them quite badly behaved, quite demanding, quite attention seeking. And so that really actually for me alleviated something, because it isn't the dog's fault, is it, that they're small and yappy. How do you feel about miniature dogs?
I quite like miniature dachshunds.
Oh, well, I've got a dachshund.
Okay.
They wouldn't consider themselves a miniature dog, I think.
Yeah, but generally I have got a neighbour who breeds dogs, King Charles Spaniels, I think they are. So I have to listen to them yapping all the time, so I'm not.
Yeah, they're an issue for you. So there you go. That's my bit of honesty. Yeah. Sorry if you're a miniature dog owner. What a way to end, from like periods to pocket-sized dogs. But anyway, I've been Clemmie Telford, and this lovely lady has been Maisie Hill, and this has been Honestly Podcast. Thank you for listening. Please rate, review, subscribe, and tell your mates all about it. Thank you very much. And that's it. Time to say goodbye with one final shout out to our podcast sponsors, Marks & Spencer's. Thank you to this brilliant brand for giving me the opportunity to do what I love. If you found this week's episode interesting, which I hope you did, I'd love to know your thoughts. So please do give me a rating or review, and even better, hit the subscribe button. That way you'll get each week's episode delivered straight to you. Oh, and one final thought. I'm always looking for inspiration for new subjects. So if you've got any topics that you'd like me to cover that I haven't done already, please do send your suggestions my way. You can either leave a comment below on iTunes or hop over to Instagram and send me a DM, and I'd love to hear from you. Thanks very much.